At the time, he'd never written any lyrics. I had never thought of it, I don't think. And when he joined the band, really, we had 1 week to rehearse before our first American tour. And we had a date, like 8 days later, to play at the Pittsburgh Civic Arena, opening for Uriah Heep and Manfred Mann. So, you know, that was first and foremost in our mind, and we were just looking for a drummer. We never thought about, you know, lyrics, anything like that. The more we got to know Neil, the more we realized his immense knowledge of the English language and his interest in reading. He was a very different person for us, and a person full of ideas and very verbose. And Alex and I just looked at each other and said, this is the guy to solve all our problems. Couldn't get anything but a single deal until we formed our own record label. So if you think about that and you think about what it's like today, it doesn't seem much different, does it? So in one sense, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And I think, although it must be very frustrating for many bands to try to get a deal, especially an album deal now, I think the climate was not dissimilar to what it was back in 73 and 74. Closer to the heart. Yes, closer to the heart. Yeah!
Oh! You know, we've been outside of trends. We've been outside of the mainstream. I think if there ever was an alternative band, it's been us. For decades, we've been alternative to just about everything that's been going on.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Geddy Lee of Rush.
Hi, this is Alex Lifeson of Rush in the studio with Redbeard.
Now's a perfect time to revisit when Rush was struggling to graduate from several years of opening shows for Kiss and Manfred Mann's Earth Band and Uriah Heep to playing their own shows, albeit to much smaller audiences, in small theaters in front of a slowly growing but extremely loyal Rush fan base. Meanwhile, music critics panned Rush, and most American radio stations simply ignored them through seven full albums in the 1970s. Rush guitarist Alex Lifeson proved to be pragmatic about the Toronto Trio's chances even then.
We started the band. It was called The Projection at first for about a year, and we were just a basement band. We played parties. We never played for money or anything. And we were horrible. But we knew about a dozen songs, and we knew how to play them really badly, and we just kept repeating them over the course of the night until everybody would leave. But you got to start somewhere, and you may as well start in your own basement so you don't have to walk home from there.
Alex, who adopted the stage surname Lifeson, and Gary, who combined his nickname Geddy with his actual middle name Lee, could not get a record deal from any label, U.S. or Canadian. In desperation, they recorded an album independently on their own little label called Moon Records, which wasn't even available in the States. Yet I played it at my first radio station in Ohio in 1974 as an import. I asked Geddy Lee of Rush if their band would get signed by a label in today's music business.
I would say I seriously doubt it. The only way that would have been possible was on a very small independent label, like many of the what you'd have today as the slash metal bands. We would have been, I think, treated like a lot of those bands are treated today. You know, maybe I'm wrong, but that's my gut feeling. I think it would be very difficult to get a major label interested in what we were doing. I don't think it's healthy. I don't think anybody thinks it's healthy, except the people that are making money from it. But The fact of the matter is, in one sense, it's not really very different from when we started, because as I told you earlier, we couldn't get anything but a single deal until we formed our own record label. So if you think about that and you think about what it's like today, it doesn't seem much different, does it? So in one sense, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Although it must be very frustrating for many bands to try to get a deal, especially an album deal now. I think the climate was not dissimilar to what it was back in 73 and 74.
The electrifying blue-collar anthem Working Man received enough airplay from Rush's indie debut that they were signed by a Chicago-based label, Mercury Records. Their first drummer, John Rutsey, flamed out just days before Rush was scheduled to play the States for the very first time. Geddy Lee recalls how drummer Neil Peart was drafted into Rush.
We really didn't know how to start, so we just really went with recommendations from other musicians that we knew. Someone had mentioned Neil's name to one of our managers at the time. He told us about it, and we said, well, go see the guy. So he drove out to St. Catharines, where Neil was working in his father's farm equipment store. And at that time, Neil had just, I think, a year earlier, had come back from trying to make it in Britain and had sort of resigned himself to not being happy with the way his career was going and was happy working for his father and playing drums on the weekends in local bands. So it was kind of ironic for him, because here came an opportunity that he had covered half the earth looking for, kind of, when he least expected it, and it came walking in the door for him.
We'd like to take you back to our beginnings, do a couple of things. The first one's called Working Man.
Follow.
the powerful sonic calling card of three guys from the Toronto suburbs planting their flag in the footlights of the venerable London launching pad of so many legendary bands, the Hammersmith Odeon Theatre, back in February 1978. Rush touching all the bases in London with a medley of Working Man from their indie debut, the title song to their follow-up Fly By Night, and an overlooked rock and roll nugget, In the Mood, again from their 1974 first effort. Next, a key man walks from his father's tractor store beyond the lighted stage into rock history as one of music's greatest drummers and lyricists. I'm Redbeard with Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson in the studio.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Geddy Lee of Rush.
Hi, this is Alex Lifeson of Rush in the studio with Redbeard.
Rush received a major upgrade by the addition of Neil Peart when he was encouraged to write lyrics for the band, according to Geddy Lee.
At the time, he'd never written any lyrics. Had never thought of it, I don't think. And when he joined the band, really, we had 1 week to rehearse before our first American tour. And we had a date, like 8 days later, to play at the Pittsburgh Civic Arena, opening for Uriah Heep and Manfred Mann. So, you know, that was first and foremost in our mind, and we were just looking for a drummer. We never thought about, lyrics, anything like that. The more we got to know Neil, the more we realized his immense knowledge of the English language and his interest in reading. And he was a very different person for us, and a person full of ideas and very verbose. And Alex and I just looked at each other and said, this is the guy to solve all our problems.
Thank you. Rush with the 2112 Overture and Temples of Syrinx from their fourth album in 1976. Neil Peart's lyrics on 2112 have been influenced by author Ayn Rand's book, Anthem, but it's bass player Geddy Lee who is responsible for actually singing those thoughts.
You take two kinds of attitudes when you're a singer, I think. The one is that you write the lyrics or you believe in the lyrics that have been written so strongly that you become the same statement. You have to understand and agree in order to sing it with conviction, I guess is the term I'm looking for. And then there's the other point of view where you look at yourself as an interpreter of someone else's thoughts, and very much like an actor, you know, who takes a screenplay and goes out and he didn't write the words, but he's, to the best of his ability, trying to convey the feelings that person had written. So I think both those things come into play with my role in this band. I think we long to break out of the boring surrounding of the suburbs and the endless similarities and the, you know, the houses after houses after houses that were the same, no trees, and you know what I'm saying, and the shopping plazas and all that stuff. And our way, I guess, of trying to be different and not wanting to conform was by growing our hair long, and this music that we were into sort of spoke to us in a way that was a vehicle for us to speak out against whatever you speak out against when you're a teenager. I mean, you know, that's part of teenage life is going through all these hormonal and psychological changes that you don't even know what you're doing half the time. I would describe us as, you know, the kind of kids that, you know, we were growing our hair, we were playing in a band, we thought we were kind of hip, but I guess we thought we were kind of cooler than the next guy, but we probably weren't.
Closer to the heart. Blacksmith and the artist reflected in their art. They forged their creativity closer to the heart. Yes, closer to the heart.
Originally on 1977's album A Farewell to Kings, Closer to the Heart became a Rush fan favorite, bringing out a sea of Bic lighter flames flickering in darkened theaters across North America. Despite a hostile press, there was an ever-increasing demand building to see Rush in concert, which presented a dilemma, according to drummer-lyricist Neil Peart.
And each stage of our development has been a real struggle on our part, where we've been holding tenaciously onto our last level. And when we graduated to headlining the small theaters, you know, the vaudeville leftovers and so on, the 3,000, 4,000 seat theaters, we clung to that so tenaciously that we were starting to get so big that we were doing three or four nights in those places, five nights in those kind of theaters. And it just wasn't practical because there were so many other people who weren't getting to see us because we were spending 5 days in one city, you know. And it wasn't fair, really, when you came down to it, that people wanted to see us and couldn't. So you couldn't justify it anymore, you know. We couldn't say it was a compromise. It was a limitation that we faced, that too many people wanted to see us. It's not something we're able to control. So we were pushed into the arenas, basically, by the laws of supply and demand.
The breakthrough for Rush, and Not a Moment Too Soon, was Closer to the Heart, the perennial favorite to this day from A Farewell to Kings. Still to come, guitarist Alex Lifeson joins Geddy Lee to time travel from the futuristic year of 2112 to Rush's own Game of Thrones. With the successful melding of hard rock with progressive rock's longer thematic suites, Rush's fourth album, 2112, in the year 1976, was their bestseller to date. But as you'll hear from Alex Lifeson, Geddy Lee, and Neil Peart next, Rush would battle press and radio pushback every step of the way. Follow In the Studio on Facebook and visit us at inthestudio.net. I'm Red Beard, In the Studio with Rush.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Geddy Lee of Rush.
Hi, this is Alex Lifeson of Rush in the studio with Redbeard.
Thanks again, guys. Throughout the 70s, Rush toured tirelessly and recorded regularly. Loyal Rush fans bought every ticket on the 1978 Hemispheres tour. Yet music critics complained that Rush singer Geddy Lee sang too high, that Rush lyricist Neil Peart was too cerebral, that the long opuses were self-indulgent and too hard to follow. The post-punk modern sounds of The Police, The Cars, and Peter Gabriel were revitalizing rock music, and the members of Rush found themselves at a creative crossroads, according to singer, bass player Geddy Lee.
We were happy with the challenge of being able to write 20-minute pieces and being able to do sidelong works, and we'd done it a number of times by then, and we felt it was almost becoming a cross to bear for us in a way that it was almost limiting us in what we wanted to be. And so we sort of tried to get back to our original desires as songwriters. I think we wanted to become a little more concise and be able to get our ideas across in a more concise and more contemporary manner. Music was changing. Rock music was changing dramatically at that point. There was a lot of bands coming in that were doing things quickly on a low budget and doing things very good, and also doing things that were rhythmically more interesting, and with the influence of reggae and white reggae and, you know, more sort of aggressive punk music that was coming out. And we very much wanted to be part of that. We very much wanted to learn what was going on and reflect the times as opposed to be left behind.
There is unrest in the forest. There is trouble with the trees. For the maples want more sunlight and the oaks ignore their pleas.
Trouble with the maple.
It was a modest 3-minute song included on A Farewell to Kings in 1977 that proved to be the key in pointing the way forward for Rush on a long road that eventually would lead to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Again, Geddy Lee.
Our ambitions were getting bigger in one sense, in the way that we eventually thought we could sound. And we suddenly accepted the fact that maybe there are other ways to enhance the sound of our band and other textures that we couldn't ignore from the technology that was growing up around us and existed in other areas of the music world.
When Rush guitarist Alex Lifeson gazes back through the eyeglass in reverse, as Neil Peart once wrote, Alex hears an unadulterated sincerity in three very young men with one big dream.
Well, to a great degree, you try to hold on to that innocence, that the quality of innocence, because it's attached to spontaneity and in that innate instinctiveness that people have. And certainly when you're a musician or an artist or whatever, it's important to keep a portion of that as part of your character makeup. I think as you get older, certainly the innocence does slip away. The reality of growing changes. Everything around you changes. Your whole perspective on the way you view things changes. I mean, physically, it changes. You don't look at things the same way as you did when you were in your teens or your 20s or whatever. Every year, there's a change in the way you see things. Musically, I think it's really important to try to keep a finger on that pulse and not lose it completely.
This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, Alex Lifeson, Geddy Lee, and Neil Peart. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard. For Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2017, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter, Brune. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, @RedbeardRocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.